All right. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mobility Podcast. This is Greg Rogers here at TRB Day 3, and we're going to have a really exciting and I think fun conversation ahead for you. Sitting down with Carlos Cruz Casas, who's the Chief Innovation Officer for the Department of Transportation and Public Works in Miami-Dade County.
Correct.
And Carlos is just a fantastic public sector leader who's very forward-thinking, and I've had the great pleasure of going down to the Railvolution Conference, now known as Impact, in November of last year.
Yeah.
And Carlos, you and your team showed us a really good time. You showed us all these great multimodal options, and when I heard you were going to be at TRB, I was really excited to sit down with you and talk about just all of the things that's happening in Miami, because there's just this wealth of multimodal options, and also just a lot of different challenges you face as a city for getting people around, because you have water, because you have, you know, all of these different factors. So I guess let's start off, though, with a big picture question. And we inherited this question from Kristen White from ITS America.
Yeah.
What's your transportation story? How did you get here, and what makes you get out of bed every day?
Oh, interesting. Thank you, Greg. I've been listening to some of your shows before, and I always thought it would be fun to be here. So, good opportunity to be here. I've been doing transportation for a long time now. It started when I was undergrad, that I needed to, you know, make my living trying to start doing some work. I was fortunate enough to actually work with some professors in the University of Puerto Rico and their master's students on their thesis. Basically, I was their support for the master's students. And all of a sudden, I realized that there was a great opportunity for us to create a positive impact into our community. You know, from civil engineer, you can go in different ways, but I realized quickly, it might sound a little corny, but with transportation, you can help a lot more people, right?
Yeah.
And that's what drove me to where I am. I pursue that. I had the opportunity to... From there, thanks to Professor Benjamin Colucci from Puerto Rico, he said he needed my help. He needed my help immediately to go to Savannah, Georgia, and tell people how the Technology Transfer Institute was actually helping foster the development of the workforce in transportation.
Yeah.
And he asked me once, and I said, whatever you need. And he looked at me, you're the first one that says yes. What can I do for you? And all of a sudden, I said, Professor, I got into Urbana-Champaign, Texas A&M, and Georgia Tech. I would love to talk to the folks at University of Florida. They have a great program, very technical, and would love to be there, but it's just too late for me to apply.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, don't worry. From the return from Savannah, Georgia, he said, I got you a stop in Jacksonville, a car to Gainesville, two nights stay there. The rest is on you, my friend.
Wow.
So that opportunity that drive to go in,
yeah,
and talk to a professor and meet with University of Florida, and all of a sudden get opportunity to join a master's in transportation planning and engineering, to me, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that life, basically,
literally life-changing.
Life-changing.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of a sudden, I recourse everything that I was thinking, and mm-hmm, basically got a new direction and just went on it.
Mm-hmm.
Went on it. And yeah, to me, it's that. I see that, you know, nobody wakes up in the morning and say, man, I want to ride that bus or I want to ride that train all day long. Mm-hmm. They said, I need to go to school. I need to go to work. I need to meet with my friends. I need to go for dinner. And all that is done through mobility and transportation. So
yeah,
if you think about it, we have a great impact and we have a lot of great things to do. And I know Miami and many other cities are on the way up. And the best thing we can do is put our hands on it and help move it in that direction.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a great transportation story. I love a lot of things there, and you know, this is one conversation I often have with people, is that there are a lot of people find everyone finds their own way into transportation, obviously, but there's often a lot of like people just accidenting into it,
mm-hmm,
or having someone help to steer you just a little bit, just that nudge, and because you know it's such a it's a field that's filled with so many people who are just so passionate and who are so focused on human outcomes,
mm-hmm,
even in an era when there's just so much focus on technology, focus on, you know, innovation. And it's I'm constantly inspired by the people that I encounter, like you, who are focused on those human ends of the industry. So let's talk about Miami.
Yes,
I have a million things about I want to talk about with Miami, but I'll say this first. All right, day three voice. I'll say this first about about the Revolution trip is that, you know, people often joke about people movers. You know, they're not always the fastest way to get anywhere. But Miami has a really good people mover, the Metro Mover.
Yeah, yeah, the automated people mover.
And it's fantastic.
Yes.
It's automated, and it took me from the airport to the hotel where Revolution was. And it also has the most gorgeous views you can ever get on public transit in America, I'm pretty sure.
And it's going to get better, my friend.
Yeah.
It's going to get better. So, and, you know, when we talked about the different modes in transportation in Miami area, in the greater Miami, right, we're representing Miami-Dade County, which is inclusive of 34 municipalities and unincorporated areas, a full, you know, I think it's about 2,000 square miles of area and about 600 urbanized area within Miami-Dade County. And people don't think about we have that many options to move around, right? We don't think that they have this kind of multimodal component to it. And there's certainly ways for us to improve, and there's a couple of things coming down the road. But if you go into kind of the urban core of the downtown Miami, yes, you have the connection from the airport, from the Metro Rail, which is an elevated heavy rail system. It's been there since the 80s, right? And then the automated people mover in downtown Miami, Central Business District, with two lines to the north, one to the north, one to the south. The way that I describe the automated people mover to me, it is an extension of your walkable network.
Yeah. Right?
But you're walking in Miami, it might be hot, it might be raining, you just want to be a little further, you feel comfortable walking 10 minutes, 15 minutes, that's about it. But you can just walk 5 minutes to the Metro Mover, get on it, get a couple stops down the road, and walk a little further.
Yeah.
So you think about it, that removing the friction of being able to get places by walking, it is to me what the Metro Mover does the best, right? And that has allowed us to then rethink what happens on the ground. Mm-hmm. Right now, just last year, you know, we bought the bullet, right? We said, you know what, we're gonna take travel lanes away, and we're gonna turn them into separated and protected bike lanes. And the reason why, because we can still have capacity to move people around across the bridge and within downtown Miami with the mover, with the local circulators, accessing with the Metro Rail system, and now introducing separated and protected bike lanes. It is a game changing.
Yeah.
It's a game changing. And you talk about the human elements. Let me tell you, it took us, it was a lot of fight to do so, right? Take a travel lane away and basically show that we can move more people. And yes, we're now able to see the increase in cyclists and scooters and people using the system. But the one thing that I love the most is a tweet, that picture that Bike Safe from University of Miami tweeted about 2 or 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. It was this family with their kid riding the bicycle to school.
Oh,
so
I love that.
Right.
Family mobility.
Family mobility.
Is my theme of the year is family mobility.
Go. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So there was this kid, you know, in his little bicycle with his helmet, riding on the bike lane. And he was able to do so because it was a separate and protected bike lane already, ensuring that we have limited the potential conflicts with cars, right? Mm-hmm. And the parents felt comfortable doing so.
Yeah.
And we can only do so, right? And I think my goal is we need to improve mobility options in order for us to accommodate more of the people element on the streets. Mm-hmm. So if it's more walkable and bikeable and rollable, whatever you want to say. But it's really the opportunity that we have. And there's a lot more around it, right? And I think it's really interesting to see how we are growing as a community. About 6 years ago, Miami-Dade County basically decided that it was going to once and for all continue to pursue the extension of rapid transit systems. Mm-hmm. And it was a creation, or it was then the SMART plan, the Strategic Miami Area Rapid Transit Plan, where it was the extension of the rapid system along six corridors, over 80 miles of service. Today, we no longer call it a SMART plan. nowadays a SMART program, because we're in implementation of those corridors. Mm-hmm. It's under construction, almost 50% completion, a full gold standard BRT down south, 20 miles connecting from the southern end of the Metrorail system to Florida City and Homestead, which is kind of the end of our community.
And 20 miles of BRT in America is impressive.
Yes.
I mean, to be able to do that.
And next time, though, we need to invite you to come to Miami. When you see it, you'll be blown away.
Yeah.
It is a BRT not only dedicated right away, mm-hmm. With 40 intersections, wow. all them basically with arm gates to come down in order to ensure safety and allow buses to go through at a higher speed through the intersections. The 14 stations that we're going to have a canopy that goes from edge to edge of the entire right-of-way, mm-hmm. covering not only the sidewalk and the access for the local bus, but the center platform with climate control.
Wow. Right?
So it is, if you think about it, if you look at it, it is going to be transformative, not only for Miami-Dade County, but also telling the nation that we can do bus. We can do bus and basically meet what people want. People not necessarily want rail.
Yeah.
They want the service they associate with rail, and we can do that very well with bus. But in addition to that, you mentioned the mover. And when I say we're going to have the most beautiful views, it will. Now we have basically announced, actually when you were in Miami for Revolution, now Impact, we announced that we are extending the mover from downtown Miami to Miami Beach.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a game changer, man.
That's something else.
Yeah,
I'm really thrilled. Like, it's going to take us some time. It's a navigation of water. It's a lot of protected environment, mm-hmm. things we to go through. But just the fact that the decision was made and now we have the alignment in order to move forward with that, mm-hmm. it is to me game changing.
Yeah.
Procurement is going to go out next year, so we're already on the right direction there. And we're going to continue. We're going to continue to extend our network.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you guys have this incredible, it feels like, momentum behind a lot of these projects. And obviously there's support and it takes this political courage from, you know, the local leaders to pull this forward. How did you guys get here? Because I think that a lot of cities would just envy this ability to be able to mm-hmm. conceive of these projects, be able to find the funding, and then execute on them. Where can you, how did this come about?
It's about leadership, if you think about it, and about better communication,
mm-hmm.
right? Over the last 5 years, you start seeing how we stop talking about individual corridors and package them into one plan.
Yeah.
Right. All of them were moving forward at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
There was not you first, that first prioritization between corridors. Let's move them forward
mm-hmm.
And do all the due diligence we need to do and just move them.
Yeah.
But you have leadership. You have commitment from our mayor, Mayor Daniela Levin Cava, which is amazing. And the first,
she's incredible.
Incredible.
She came in and gave the speech at Railvolution, and I had goosebumps. and she's also hysterical. She had incredible.
One of the things I love about her, in addition to her leadership, is that she starts and begins everything with empathy, right, and about community and how we can actually make their life better, right? So driving with that force kind of gets that coalition that is needed, right?
Yeah.
And kind of bring people together. You know, often people refer to her as the collaboration in chief, right?
Yeah.
So is it the person that brings things together, right? So I think it is great to see that we were able to align our financial kind of projections and where we need to go with the decision making of the particular basically program now mm-hmm. to actually get projects down the road. But along those lines, you know, we cannot rely only on major transit, you know, projects to improve mobility in our community.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that, and again, for cities listening, like we're not only thinking about that. Yeah, we have six corridors, but we're a large county, bigger than some states, right? One of the things that we really care the most, and you briefly talk about innovation. When I think about innovation, I don't think about technology. I think about approaching our problems from a different point of view or angle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking differently in how we look for solutions. So the most innovative project that I've done, and I've done artificial intelligence, I've done, big data components, a bunch of different things, but the most innovative project that I've done was working side by side with a transit advocacy group
mm-hmm.
to not only push forward for the need to, but also plan for it and get approved the first ever Miami-Dade County full bus network redesign. So working with the Transit Alliance Miami, you know, typical, you know, transit advocacy groups that will criticize us and will throw stones at us, right? And us trying to kind of can navigate through that, we're able to sit down and say, you know what? Let's identify what's our common goal. Our common goal is transit need to change. And together we were able to then focus on that, focus on the outcomes that we're trying to achieve. And then, we were able to get funding. We contributed. They raised some funds. We got Jarawaka and Associates. We got Transit Alliance Miami leading the community engagement and the project, and our entire team doing all the technical component. We got the plan approved. And now, hopefully, as we get more operators on our, you know, on our books, we'll be able to implement. And I say that because we sometimes focus too much on capital projects. And by making those changes, nothing small. We're talking about massive change of our bus network. We have over 99 bus routes today, right? And what we're doing is reallocating resources to heavy corridors and having them be frequent all day, every day, from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. That network, that operational improvement, is going to be transformative for Miami and can help us then kind of continue to increase the utilization of public transit as we know it today to get people around efficiently.
That's incredible. And, you know, hats off to you guys to going to, you know, your local transit advocates who can often be the people who are the biggest fans and definitely the biggest critics of in any metropolitan area. And I think that what stands out here to me is you really think about what's going to get the what's going to get more people on the buses. It's going to be reliable. It needs to be reliable for them, for more people to take buses. And it needs to be reliable. They need to also be able to rely on other options that intersect with them.
So I think when you say reliable, I'm going to go one step further. The best marketing that we can get to do to get people back on buses is frequency. You know, having a high frequency route and get people moving quickly. That's the way to go. We are, like many agencies, basically constrained in resources, you know, funding, equipment, buses. We, of course, continue to purchase now, actually getting 75 electric buses and moving on to get more.
Great.
But operators too, right? So then one of my challenge in my role is about bringing mobility innovation. And what I'm trying to do now is identify, okay, we know nothing beats a well-run transit system, right? A high-frequency bus or a rail, better than anything you can actually have. But those need to be in the corridors, in the places that they belong, right? And really taking a step back and say, a fixed route, 40-foot bus, 60-foot bus, doesn't belong everywhere in Miami-Dade County. It doesn't belong everywhere in our communities.
There are other options that are better fits for different areas.
So right-sizing that expectation of what transit is. And what I started seeing now, and I think this is, I don't know, it's been, to me, an interesting conversation because probably 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you know, you mentioned the word transit desert. And at TRB, they will kick you out of the room, right? that you cannot talk about transit desert. And I think now we have an opportunity to say, you know what? It's okay to have a transit desert as long as we don't have a mobility desert, as long as we have other options that can continue to allow people to move, connect to transit, and whether it's the first mile, the last mile, or the only mile, it's our responsibility to move them.
I think that's really interesting, and I think it's also courageous of you to say, because I think that, this is exactly right. There are places where you put a 40, 60-foot bus there. You're not going to get, you know, the ridership that really helps. So I would be curious in thinking about right-sizing these different modes. You know, it seems like there are lots of new options enabled by technology. We have microtransit. We have micromobility. How are you thinking about these alternatives that you can provide? Or that you partner with companies to provide, right?
Certainly, no. Just so many ideas or thoughts come through my head right now. We'll start with this, right? We've talked about how the buses need to be in the places they belong, right? And not by having a transit line on a map that runs every 60 minutes through a neighborhood. It is called transit, right? That's not the right thing to do, right?
Yeah.
It is then why people say transit is not for me, mm-hmm. right? And because they think about bus and rail only. And I'm like, immediately I said, no, you're wrong. Like, mm-hmm. transit is for you and it's for everyone, but perhaps not for every trip.
Yeah.
There's other opportunities to move people around. And it's as we define transit today, I'm urging the industry to start thinking about redefining the term transportation and public transportation or transit mm-hmm. to include bus and rail like we always done, but also include everything else that can connect people to opportunities.
Yeah. Right?
So that's something that we need to kind of rethink, and we'll get there. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, one of the things that we're doing is exploring what are the other mobility options, right? You mentioned microtransit. Right now, we have a growing network of microtransit solution in Miami-Dade County. Mm-hmm. We're working with VIA in our program. It's called the Go Connect program, which identify four areas within Miami-Dade County in which we operate a fully on-demand transit system. Mm-hmm. We use smaller vehicles, and they're hailed the same way that people are accustomed to hail their on-demand transportation, mm-hmm. but it's really like transit.
Yeah.
It's really like transit because we're asking people to walk, right, to a meetup point,
yeah.
Because we're maintaining a waiting time that is relatively comfortable but still comparable to transit, right? Mm-hmm. And we're sharing the ride. And ultimately, that is providing great opportunity for people to access. We've seen a huge increase in our ridership.
Yeah.
Of course, I'll tell you this. If someone ever asked me, I said, don't start a new service during COVID. You know, but okay. After that, you know, we start seeing now how people are really understanding that this is a new form of public transportation.
Yeah.
Miami-Dade County. So, yeah, I think the Go Connect right now, it is being very successful so far, and we're looking for ways to increase and continue to evolve from that one. Before we go to micromobility, the other component that I think we as an industry need to pay more attention to it is all these new mobility solutions that have come over the last 5-10 years mm-hmm. have benefited pretty much everyone in our communities, with the exception of our paratransit community, right?
Yeah.
The people with limited mobility, mm-hmm. right? They're often left behind. And I'm like, this is something that we need to change, right? And what I'm thinking right now is we run microtransit with our partners via. We probably run about 25, 30 vehicles in that system. Mm-hmm. We also run a paratransit program with almost 500 vehicles. Mm-hmm. And we talk about the economies of scale and trying to define that really on-demand transit and paratransit are not too much of a difference, right? Mm-hmm. One is the day before and one is in real time. But why not make it real time for particular trips?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I'm challenging the team, and I think we're going to work on that this year, is to come back out to the industry and say, tell me how we can actually leverage the paratransit program to help provide better microtransit solution that can help people with limited mobility also to be participant of those new technologies.
Yeah.
Right? There's no reason.
That'd be tremendous.
So that's our goal. I think I'm really interesting to see how we can actually make that work, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not a pie in the sky. Like, really, if you look through it, like, immediately you realize there's opportunities for us to take some of the paratransit trips and refer them and move them to microtransit at a lower cost and a better customer experience. Mm-hmm. And yet, yes, we still have community members that they need more help to move around. And I'm fine to dedicate more time and dedicate more resources for those members of our community.
And you'll even have the flexibility to do that if you are able to, if it is successful in providing those rides. Yeah.
So that's to me something that we need to work on, and we need to leverage what we already have learned about transit. When it's a fixed route, high frequency, you all of a sudden you feel comfortable kind of sending those passengers in that direction because you know they're not waiting as long on the inclement weather. Mm-hmm. But then you have on-demand transit. So I'm really interested to see that. And I think the other opportunity that we have in order to ensure that we have resources enough that can move people that need that additional help to be moved around is make it easier for everyone else that is willing and able, that is enable, that someone that can, that, that would like and be participant and can ride a bicycle or a scooter or something else to provide for that, right? Because sometimes during COVID, we had this program with our partners for rewards, Velocia, where I was trying to figure out how we can continue to provide service with limited capacity on our buses, right? And we went down to 25% capacity, if you think about it, right?
Yeah. In you had to close down the front of the bus. Did you guys tape off the front of the bus like a lot of other folks did?
Yeah. So we did that. And all of a sudden what happened is we were leaving people behind on the bus stop. And I tell you, that's not the time to leave people behind.
Yeah.
We started adding, we went immediately down to 40% of our service. Within a month, we're back 100% of our service pre-COVID on those major routes. We're still leaving people behind. And over the course of a year, we continue to add buses that we found laying around, like a tour bus that would take you to the Miccosukee Casino or the Everglades. Yeah. It was doing nothing.
Yeah.
So we wrapped them with our colors. We gave it a tablet, connected it with Swiftly, a platform, and turned that into a transit vehicle.
Now, that's what I call innovation.
There you go, right?
So, you know, that's problem solving.
It's problem solving.
Yeah.
But we're still leaving people behind. Because our ridership on the top 10 routes, it was higher during the middle of COVID than before COVID. Why?
Huh.
Just think about it, right? Yeah. So this is what I said. The elements of good transit works always, regardless of where you are.
Yeah.
High frequency by because capacity limitations. We added buses. Mm-hmm. We ended up with routes running every 5 minutes. But all of a sudden, this is a great service.
Yeah, everyone says, well, hell yeah, I'm taking this.
I'm taking it. So, but we got to a point that we couldn't do it anymore. So the only thing that I try to do is, if you are willing and able to ride a bicycle along this particular corridor, don't get on the bus. Mm-hmm. Don't take the seat away for someone that needs that seat for a 10, 15-mile trip.
Yeah.
You do a short trip, and you can do a bicycle or scooter. Mm-hmm. We're rewarding people to actually do so.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's learning from that during the health crisis. It can be thinking, we need to continue to push on that.
Yeah.
We need to continue to not only build the infrastructure, but also provide for the ability for people to get access to a micromobility device in order to get people to move around, and then we can use our system more effectively. Then on-demand transit can actually move other folks too, right? So it's like, to me, all these kind of pieces of the puzzle is kind of make it work.
Yeah, it's about choice, right? It's about giving people the choice to move around in different ways and providing that. And you know, one of the most repeated lines over the past, couple of years is people saying, what we've learned from COVID. But I think that this is actually something we did actually learn from COVID is that in the response to the pandemic is that you increased service and you built it in the game, right? And also that, you saw really where a lot of those demands were. And I think it's really, really fantastic. So I really love this, Carlos, and I want to turn to. I want to ask you. This is something that's been on my mind a lot. Is that there are a lot of American cities with waterways that are basically navigable, and in a lot of cities, like especially Washington D.C., underutilized. Tell me a little bit about marine transportation in Miami. I mean, it's incredible flying into Miami. You look out, and there's bridges everywhere, and there's just like water everywhere.
It's been something that we have been kind of thinking about it and working for a while now. So first, we are the cruise capital of the world, right? So our port is very active, right?
Yeah.
Any day can be five large cruises in there, right? So some of these waters were really taken by some of this activity on the cruise port terminals. We have an inland navigation, inland port, so there's also through the river kind of large vessel going through. But still, we do have options, right? We do have, we do have the opportunity to build. Just before the pandemic, we launched a demonstration project, basically a ferry connecting the beach to Miami, and we've been learning a lot through it. Mm-hmm. One of the things that has basically held us back in terms of providing better marine transportation, actually two special conflicts or limitations. The first one is it is a manatee protection area where 6 months out of the year we basically have to go so slow that also the transportation option doesn't become viable, right?
Wow.
We tested, you know, I got on a it was fun, when Miami, see the Miami police boat.
Oh, yeah?
Just to go around and testing the speed, I tell you, it was really fun to go through. Testing the route and going through, we did it at the knots we were supposed to go for a viable kind of ferry solution. But then we did it at the low speed, and all of a sudden it was just too long, right? Something that we need to work on. We've been looking at some of the technology with the electric vessels that are coming in from the Netherlands and other places that have a less of a wake and basically an impact to the marine life. So, again, I'm no expert on all this, but I have a team really looking at some of these options. The other thing is, once you touch ground, you need access, right?
Yeah.
So I think this is why this menu of other options are important.
Yeah.
So because you need to provide either a first and last mile connectivity between to touch ground on both sides, whether on the Miami or Miami Beach. So, I'm enthusiastic about the opportunities for us to do so.
Yeah.
There is a particular two routes that I think are going to be very interesting. One connecting from Holover Marina on the north side of the county to downtown Miami and the beach, and one going from the Palmetto and Cali Bay, which is the southern end of the county, to along the bay to Miami and Miami Beach. But what we'll see is, as you can imagine, is some of those things that putting resources behind when we still need to make it more viable, if you will. So we're working on it, but I'm optimistic that electric lightweight vessels can really help us do that in the Biscayne Bay.
Yeah,
while protecting our environment, but also take advantage of the canals, right, and the river that you mentioned, because there's a lot of those, and right now, not necessarily navigable because of the bridges and the height, but a smaller vessel, it really have an opportunity to do so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I appreciate the pragmatism here too, because it may not be the case in all cases that a boat is the best way to get folks around. Turning to on the note of water, I want to talk about climate change and resiliency, because obviously this is Miami is often one of the cities that's thought of when we think about sea level rise, but also the thing I experienced when I visited in November. Mm-hmm. Holy cow, it is hot. You guys call that fall? I mean, it's
hot
incredible.
And humid, right?
Yeah, it's hot and humid. And, I had some fantastic walks along the water before each session. It was nice to step outside, but that was before noon or maybe before 10 a.m. So, and then I heard a great presentation by you, and then also by Jane Gilbert, your chief heat officer. And I believe she's the first chief heat officer in the U.S. for a city, right?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about how that came about?
Yeah. Again, I think, our mayor basically looking to bring solutions to our community, really identifying that we need to be intentional in the way that we approach these problems. So, yes, we do have the first, I want to say, probably in the world, right, chief heat officer, Jane Gilbert. We also have a chief bay officer, which is about taking care of our bay and protecting it. I often say, Miami is hot in the full term of the word. Not only weather-wise and the temperature-wise, but a lot of people are moving to Miami.
Yeah.
It's focus of attention for many thinking about, making the move, right?
It's a booming city. It's a tech hub, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in Florida, it's incredible.
So how can we then meet the expectations of everyone coming in and the people that are living in Miami, they have made Miami their home for many years? For us, this heat, this, mm-hmm. How hot it is. It is a concern, but also an opportunity for us to rethink how we do our infrastructure and how we do our services. I've been working with Jane, and we have a few things going on. We really want to really understand the impacts of the heat to the mobility and what's taken away. Right? I think you mentioned in the last episode about, you know, someone, you know, faints and basically falls of exhaustion, right? Yeah. Trying to get to the transit bus stop. We're not meeting our goals.
Yeah.
Our transit goals, our Vision Zero goals, we're not meeting them,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, Vision Zero has such a huge tie to this public health element.
Huge tie. So two things, right? I was speaking with a good friend of mine. He's an expert on HVAC system for hospitals. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he often tells his clients is the minute the sun touches the glass door in the front, we're starting at a loss. You need to put three canopies and things to mitigate that heat mm-hmm. transmission into the building. Mm-hmm. And I was having the conversation, you know, friendly on a Sunday afternoon, and I'm like, why not treat transit the same way?
Dude, right. Yeah, absolutely. Why? Yeah.
So, people, that we put a shelter, you're done. Yeah. Like, that's not enough.
Yeah.
You know, let's remove that additional unnecessary heat.
Yeah.
Walk into the shelter and at the shelter, because it's metal and it's glass. It contains heat. So we do have now with NOAA, N-O-A-A, and Jane Gilbert, a evaluation, a study, if you will, right? We put sensors, control sensors in some areas, sensors at shelters with three canopies around, mm-hmm. and sensors at shelters are fully isolated. Mm-hmm. My goal is to be able to prove that the heat island that gets created in an environment in a bus shelter that is nowhere near a three canopy is so much higher in the impact than somewhere else. For us to continue to make the case that we need to continue to plant trees.
Yeah. Right?
Not only at the shelter, there's solar panels, so we need to figure that out, but near a shelter, creating a different environment. So we're going to be able to quantify with numbers, you know, what's at the heat island go through. And I think that, to me, is kind of the way to go, because, you know, we also tinker with all the things that we can, right? We have what I believe is the one and only AC bus shelter in United States. It's like, we do have one. Operating.
That's incredible. I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know
it existed. Yeah. It's massive.
Yeah.
It is AC, easy to get power. So we have it on one of our train stations in Hialeah. Mm-hmm. You should go stop, take a look at it. Mm-hmm. We're very expensive.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you know, we're not going to be able to put one of those in each one of our 7,500 bus stops. Right. Mm-hmm. We have 7,500 bus stops. So what can we do? Right. And I think, you know, by working collaboratively with the chief resiliency officer, with the chief heat officer and the transportation team and the parks department, I'm optimistic that we'll be able to create a network, right, mm-hmm. of three canopies that can help transit riders, but also it's going to help everyone else.
Yeah.
Someone that is just walking by, right? Yeah. They can also enjoy it of the outdoors without actually being, you know, suffering that much. Like you were probably in Miami, right?
I was walking in my suit coat, and I decided to change clothes afterwards, you know?
No. I learned my lesson, too. I'm now using suits that are online in Miami. I'm not wearing a tie for the longest time now.
No.
So you learn to live with it. But at the same time, I think we can do great things and provide a better environment for people that are just walking and be outdoors.
Yeah.
Another thing that we learned through COVID, right, and I'm not sure, at least in Miami-Dade, I believe people rediscovered the front yard.
Yeah.
Before it was everything in the backyard, everything happens behind your house. Mm-hmm. Now people are walking more and be outside more. And we have communities, right, that the three canopies are amazing. You see the activity on mm-hmm. a Tuesday evening, right, on a Saturday morning, just people just walking around. Right.
Yeah.
For recreation and whatnot, right? So to become healthy too. So
and neighbors getting to know each other, which only does better for your communities.
Exactly.
Neighbors knowing each other and also just feeling like you can walk around your community, that also really improves people using transit, right? That makes you more likely to walk to the bus. That makes you more likely to bike around the neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. And I I love that.
Yeah.
And tree canopy is so important there, because if it's too hot to stand outside, you're not going to.
Or if you do and you get to your place, you're miserable.
Yeah.
I just don't like to go to a place when I'm all sweaty and I'm making up concentrating things I need to do, right?
Yeah.
And to me is, we talk here at TRB and NACTO and many other, and Impact, many other places. We want to create livable communities. We want communities when people use active transportation, communities where people use transit.
Yeah.
But if we don't make it comfortable for them to do so, they're not going to do it. Only people have no other option.
Yeah. Right.
And I think
Our wishes and our pontification doesn't change things. it's the action.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the action. Yeah. It's the action. And I think that to me is the critical component of it, mm-hmm. to really understand what are the different elements, narrow down our focus, mm-hmm. what do we need to do in order to create the experience better, and just do it.
Yeah.
Just do
it. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, cool, Carlos. This has been a just awesome conversation. It's always so much fun to talk with you. Where can folks find you online and follow your work?
Yeah. So I'm semi-active on social media, probably not that much. But again, through our website in Miami-Dade County, miamidade.gov, or through LinkedIn. I go Carlos Cruz Casas, or like our mayor likes to call me Triple C or C3. So you look C3 Miami, they can find me around on LinkedIn or Twitter. This is great, Greg. Thank you very much. I feel, and I know we had some nice coffees in here. I felt that it was like two friends talking mobility over coffee.
Yeah, this was really fun.
It was really fun. Maybe that's a spin-off, I tell you that.
Yeah, that'd be great. I appreciate you bringing me coffee, too. Yeah. You're very kind as a guest. All right, well, thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in. Carlos, thanks again for joining. Really great to be at TRB, and thank you again to TRB for having us here. I'm Greg Rogers. You can find me at MoveGreg on Twitter and on LinkedIn. And you can also find the Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast and MobilityPodcast.com. All right, thanks, folks, for tuning in, and we'll talk to you all soon.